Bears are very smart. I wouldn't fuck around with bears. You want love, I'll
take your life. Welcome to episode 132 of the Talk to Contact podcast. I am Talk to Contact's least eligible bachelor, E. Rolf Pleiss. Joined today by Cody Christie, and maybe by Jay Korn, who's riding the bus, and Paul Pleiss, who's at the grocery store, will be here later. Cody, just the two of us, you and I, how goes it?
Not too bad. We're having a little bit of a monsoon here in F-Town as we speak, so that's pretty exciting. Maybe heading your guys' direction overnight here, but... other than that, it was our last day for actually having students at school. We have like a paperwork day and final meetings day tomorrow, and graduation is on Sunday for the West Fargo High School seniors. Wrapping things up for the regular portion of the school year.
Excellent. So what does a teacher do then? I know you're going to teach some summer classes, but do they give you like another month before you got to go take care of those kids that couldn't pass classes during the regular semester?
Oh, no, that starts on Monday. They like to get it done before the 4th of July. So we plow through it in basically a month. There's two sessions and they're each 12 days long. So you're in the same class from 8 to 1 o'clock every day, with a couple 15-minute breaks in there. But, you plow through the material and get them what they need to get the credits. So, yeah, I got a trip to Denver in July, too, for that training I've gone the last 2 years in San Diego. So I'll get to give a report on my happenings at Coors Field. And, should still be good.
Very good news. Well, I'm back. I'm married. 10 pounds heavier, thanks to all the food that I was eating. I believe that you and Paul referred to it as Nolans.
Yes.
And Paul said some butchering of the state name of Louisiana towards the end of the podcast, which I'm not even sure was spoken in English. So, but yeah, I was down there. I was eating. I got married the week before that, so the show was totally off because you guys were at home praying for me. I'm sure that's why you were unable to record.
Yes.
I know that you and Jay were unable to come to the wedding because you just both RSVP'd no, because you don't really care about me that much. Feel free to still send a gift, though. I'll give you my address off air.
Okay. Sounds I had a little something in mind, so I'll maybe next... next time we're at a Twins game together this summer, I can pass something on. Besides our bobblehead trade we had on opening day.
I hope it's helmet nachos.
Oh, yes. If you ever make it to F-Town, the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks are now serving a steaming pile of helmet nachos. So they look pretty stellar, but that'll cost you $15, even in Fargo, to get helmet nachos.
Well, you know, you get the helmet.
You do. You do get the helmet.
So, all right. Well, that's pretty cool. I have watched very little Twins baseball for the last 2 weeks. I know that the Twins are winning. I know that they're in first place. And here's the thing that is frustrating me right now. But there's, like, the Twins got into first place yesterday. And all of a sudden, everyone at work that just likes to have random, casual, small talk with you because you're a Twins fan, all of a sudden knows that the Twins are in first place and wants to talk to you about them. Except all those random Twins fans at work that are just casual fans, the only thing they're saying is, yeah, how about Torii Hunter and Joe Mauer? And the Twins are in first place. That's all you get from them. You don't get anything interesting, nothing nuanced. You got to have the same conversation like 9 times about the Twins being in first place. Meanwhile, the rest of us are over here, and we're excited because the Twins are 10 games over 500. And we know that at this point, they pretty much could go back to being a terrible team, you know, and still finish the season at 500 and be leaps and bounds ahead of where they were. And we know this team's going to continue to get better in the second half as we're going to get Irvin Santana back, and as some of these young kids are going to replace some of these, you know, low ceiling, low upside guys as we, you know, we get into September and take their lumps, and we're going to be primed for 2016. So it's an exciting time to be a Twins fan for everyone, but it's these casual office fans that just are driving me up the wall right now.
Yeah, I mean, I get a few situations like that at my school too, when you know, teachers that know that I write about the Twins or that I'm a Twins fan, you know, bring up stuff. And I feel like in previous years when things have been going bad, I've always had to be the one that's been like the, oh, hey, I mean, it's not as bad as it seems. We got these young guys that are up and coming. They're hurt this year. So let's just, you know, it might be rough for a couple seasons, but there's good things on the horizon. And now this year, with the team doing so well, I feel like I'm on the opposite end of that. I'm the guy that's now going, well, you know, the starters are maybe overshooting where they should be at, and the bullpen's been very good, and the offense is probably doing better things than most people thought they would be capable of this season. So I'm on the opposite end of things now, from that respect anyway, is trying to, you know, not have people be like, oh, we're going to the World Series. So,
I don't know. Well, and it's, you know, after 4 years of this bad of baseball, I was telling someone this before. I don't even know how to be optimistic about this team anymore. Because, as you're saying, we both expect, and as you guys talked about last week, we expect the wheels are going to fall off to some degree here before the end of the summer. And I'm not saying the Twins are going to go back on a 90-win pace or a 90-loss pace, you know, but they're not going to continue to, you know, win 5 out of 6 and, you know, win every series in a month unless it's against Detroit. You know, they're going to have some rough patches. They're going to lose series. They might lose 5 out of 6 again like they did to start the season. But I think generally more good times than bad await this Twins team down the stretch. But it's hard to be optimistic when the starting rotation is pitching over their head and the bullpen's pitching over their head. And the offense, which we thought was going to be good because it was pretty decent last year, is still hitting over their head. And I think Paul mentioned last week the Twins are scoring just enough. It's not like there's a ton of blowouts in these games. You know, they're scoring one extra run. They're getting some clutch hitting. The Twins are doing some amazing things right now with runners in scoring position. You know, so there's a little bit of luck baked into that. They're not the clutchiest team since clutch came to clutch town. But I think there's reasons to be excited. It has nothing to do with them being in first place. It has everything to do with them banking all of these wins. 28 wins, you know, before the end of May is impressive. No matter if you're in first place, third place, or last place, that's going to get you somewhere. And you can bank those wins. And you can play mediocre baseball the rest of the season and still be able to play meaningful baseball in September, or at least, you know, compete for that second wild card spot. So that's pretty exciting, but I don't want to hear about first place, because first place in May, I don't know, they don't even get participation medals for that.
Yeah, it's been promising seeing, you know, some good things from some of the hitters. You know, I'm in our shows as the season was beginning. I think, you know, I mentioned this on last week's show too, you know, like, someone like Torii Hunter, we thought maybe there would be some regression there with age, but his offensive numbers have continued to be pretty solid this year. Brian Dozier, I mean, continues to hit home runs at a pretty good clip, continues to get on base at a very good rate. We're seeing Aaron Hicks up now. I mean, he's only played 14 games. So, Eric, this might be the first show we've done where you've been back for the Aaron Hicks era. He had his first home run in the Red Sox, the finale of that Red Sox sweep the Twins just finished up. But his average and on-base percentage aren't the greatest, but he's been making some unbelievable catches out in the outfield. Did some really good things in Chicago defensively. So it would be nice, obviously, for those offensive numbers to tick up a bit, but He's markably better than what the Twins were trotting out in center field for the first portion of this season. So that helps, especially since that was one of the biggest weaknesses we talked about at going into this year was we had question marks at shortstop and most of the all of the outfield we were worried about defensively. It's nice to have a little bit of an upgrade defensively, especially because, like we said, some of that situation with the pitching might, if the pitchers continue to give up fly balls and some of these pitchers start coming back down to earth, I'd rather have Aaron Hicks out there flying around making catches than Jordan Schaefer or Shane Robinson.
Yeah, and I think we've absolutely already seen his defensive abilities pay dividends for this Twins team. Right? I think he's making maybe not catches that another good center fielder wouldn't make. I mean, I don't think he's exceptional in center field, but he's making catches that Shane Robinson and Jordan Schaefer would never make. And it's catches that if you put Eddie Rosario out of position in center field, he's not making, or you know, whatever other options they have out there. And having a stabilizing force in center allows the Twins to be not so disadvantaged with their poor corner defense. And when you're being able to pair Aaron Hicks and Eddie Rosario as two of your three outfielders, you know, then you can all of a sudden handle Torii Hunter's defense. Or you could handle, when he comes back, Eddie Rosario in one of the corners. And it doesn't look so absolutely bad. I mean, the Twins have been getting a ton of ground balls, and their staff has been doing a good job of doing that. And so some of this is the infield defense has been well. But when balls are looking like they're going to be in the gap, or they're looking like they're going to fall at the toes of a charging outfielder, Aaron Hicks is getting to those balls, or is he cutting off a ball that might be a double, but he's getting to it and holding a guy to a single, and he has enough of an arm that guys aren't going to challenge him and try and take that extra base. So I don't know that the defensive metrics are out there saying anything that's like that. I mean, he's only played, 14 or 15 games for the Twins, so there's not like a sample size that's out there. But just on the eye test, and the eye test for guys like you and me, it's not like we're professional scouts, but it just looks like he's a full standard deviation better defensively than anything the Twins have had in center field in the last year and a half, Danny Santana included.
Yeah. So some other things that have been happening, and we've touched on a little bit, a couple of the starting pitchers have been, you know, a little bit interesting to watch. We've seen Ricky Nolasco's ERA, I believe, is over 5 still, but he has 5, leads the team with 5 wins. Obviously, he got pummeled in one outing, so some of that, some of his poor numbers are from that one bad start. Mike Pelfrey has continued to surprise, pitched well, and we'll talk more about his numbers from this last week when we get down to the pitcher and hitter of the week. And Kyle Gibson, too, is in that same boat. Both Pelfrey and Gibson have ERAs under 3, while, you know, still not striking out a ton of guys. We saw a little bit of an improvement in that category from Gibson in his last start. Out of that trio there, Eric, who do you feel like has been the most surprising so far for you?
Well, I think Pelfrey and Nolasco have both been surprising. I mean, well above Gibson being surprising. So, I mean, Gibson has done nice things in the 8 strikeout, 0 walk performance he had in his last outing. Certainly raised my eyebrows a little bit considering what he was doing early in the year, but I think Ricky Nolasco, for me, has been the most surprising because what he did last year was so bad, what he came out and did at the beginning of the season this year was so bad. And I mean, the expectations for Ricky Nolasco since he signed that contract have been just as low as can be. And it looks like right now he's, you know, pitching above the level that you could have even expected if he would have just pitched to his career numbers. And so we're getting some of that positive regression, some of that good side of the regression that you get every once in a while when a guy's been so bad it's just not possible to sustain. But it seemed like he was never going to turn it around. There was no indicators that Nolasco was, you know, just one pitch or one adjustment away. It's not like he was streaking and was like good for a while and then went in the crapper again. He was just always in the crapper. So his his turnaround, his success has been very exciting. You know, and Pelfrey, I think Pelfrey has some of it in there. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. He's a guy that even with the Mets, that sometimes he's hot, then he runs cold, and the Tommy John. And even last year, he had a couple of stretches where he looked like he was ready to turn a corner, and then he didn't. So, I don't know. Pelfrey is still a mystery to me and an enigma. And I would maybe even reluctantly trust Ricky Nolasco more than I trust Mike Pelfrey at this point.
Wow.
I don't know if everyone has ever said such a thing, but.
Yeah. That's right now, Ricky Nolasco is allowing opponents to hit 315 against him. He has a 1.61 whip, but he's got 5 victories, folks. Oh, wins are dumb. So yeah, I mean, I wonder when it comes to Pelfrey. I mean, I know he dealt with all the different injuries last year and didn't really get to pitch a ton. But you wonder how much of it is that. And, I mean, the Twins obviously felt confident enough in him coming off of that Tommy John that they wanted to get some of that bounce back. I mean, you hear a lot of times about guys coming back from Tommy John. Sometimes it takes them a year. And that's why they were more willing to sign him to the contract that they did sign him to. So, I mean, maybe that contract's finally paying a little bit of some dividends for them. That the Kyle Gibson numbers are interesting. Again, I feel like we're seeing more of that same Kyle Gibson we saw last year, where you have some good starts and some bad starts. And that was something that we talked about too. I mean, we need some more of that consistency from him to consistently, even when he has some bad innings, to be able to get a strikeout when he needs them, which we saw in that last start, and then being able to limit some of the damage. So it's definitely going to be interesting as the season progresses, because we do have Irvin Santana that we have to fit into this rotation in a handful of weeks. And Tommy Malone has been dominating at AAA, and dominating might be a little bit of an understatement, but he's pitched over 32 innings and has only given up one earned run. And he's struck out like 44 or 45, just some crazy numbers. So, I mean, at some point they're going to have to find places for some of these guys. It sounds like Malone will be staying down in the minors for a little bit longer, because the Twins don't feel like anybody up at the major league level has lost their spot yet. But someone's gonna have to fall by the wayside at some point, because Santana needs a spot. So it's definitely an injury could pop up. Some of these guys could come back down to earth. So it's nice that maybe for the first time in quite a while, the Twins actually have some pitching depth, where in previous seasons we were just trying to scrape together getting a Scott Diamond in the rotation, and, you know, getting these pieces to fill up a rotation, where now this year we're going to have some pieces where, you know, where is Trevor May still going to have a spot once if Malone keeps pitching like this, and if Irvin Santana comes back, you know, like there are going to be some things for this team to sort out in the weeks to come.
Well, and I think that's where it gets a little bit dangerous, because it seems like Trevor May might be the guy that's on the outs and might lose his spot. But Trevor May has, if you look beyond ERAs, he's got an ERA just a tick under 5. His FIP is 2.98. And he has amassed more WAR than any other Twins pitcher, right? So he's having a pretty decent season once you get past that ERA. So when you look at the strikeouts that he's getting, he's really, really limiting his walks this year. He's not in Phil Hughes territory, but he's the next best starter, you know, with more than 30 innings pitched. You know, he's at 1.65, and this is a guy that was over 3, you know, and this was a guy that we were really worried, can he get the walks under control? So,
yep.
know, he's kind of looking, he's pretty close to a 6-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. That's great. He's keeping the ball in the ballpark, the one thing that Phil Hughes isn't doing this year. He's getting victimized by BABIP. He's got a 348 BABIP against, so that's probably going to come down a little bit. He's getting plenty of ground balls, and I mean, this is a guy that, despite that 4.95 ERA, really has been getting the job done. And then same thing with Ricky Nolasco. This is a guy that I trust him more than Mike Pelfrey at this point. Nolasco has the best FIP on the team. You know, he's got a better K per nine rate than Trevor May does. He's walking a little bit more guys, but he again is getting victimized by high BABIP. Some of that he throws kind of junk up there, and if he leaves it up, it's going to get hard and get hit for a base hit. But he's getting, you know, almost 43% ground balls, and so he's not giving up a ton of home runs either, so maybe that could regress a little bit. But both of those guys, beyond what they're doing, when you look at their xFIP or their FIP, they're producing a lot better than maybe just the surface number ERA looks. And then Gibson and Pelfrey are exactly the opposite of that. You know, they both have ERAs in the 2.7s, and both their FIP is exactly 4.20. So their results don't necessarily match up with the things that they've been doing individually. And then Phil Hughes seems like a mystery to me. You know, he's not striking out as many guys as he did last year. He's walking a few more, but his walks per nine is still under one. I mean, he's still doing a great job there throwing strikes. He's giving up so many home runs right now. So he's giving up almost two home runs per every nine innings. That's essentially a home run every time he goes out and has a start. So that's tough. That's probably going to go down. I mean, his home run to fly ball ratio is like 13%. So that's not sustainable. He's going to get better, but when you kind of look past just the ERA and you look at those five guys, who is the guy that loses his spot when Santana comes back? Right? I mean,
well, you
have
can't, to
think. Can't take it away from Pelfrey because of the success that he's had.
Yeah.
You know, Trevor May is doing everything that you've asked of him. He has nothing to prove in AAA. You can't move him to the bullpen. I mean, I don't know what happens. This is a really good problem to have, but I just don't know how that all works out. And then you've got Malone on top of that. Because Malone has he even given up a run yet in AAA? He's essentially just striking out every other batter and just looks like he's, you know, somebody messed with the bull and now they're getting the horns, right? I mean, this is a guy who's just going down to AAA and he says, fuck you guys, I deserve to be in a major league rotation. And all of a sudden the Twins have five starting pitchers up there that are producing and they got two guys that they can shove in and they're not going to lose anything, you know? Like you said, it's not Scott Diamond, it's not Sam DiDuno, it's not Cole DeVries. There's real pitchers that can be a part of this rotation.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think that, I mean, when push comes to shove, that Hughes, Nolasco, Santana are going to be locked in some way or fashion to those top three spots, if you want to call it. So that leaves the grouping of four of Gibson, Pelfrey, May and Malone for the last couple spots. So I don't know if the Twins are hoping someone gets injured so that they can, claim the oblique strain or something like that so they can toss a guy on the DL. It's a good problem to have, and we'll have to see how everything gets sorted out here in the next few weeks. So,
If you could make your ideal five-man staff, assuming you have those seven guys to choose from, who are your two guys that don't make that
rotation?
Don't
make it? Pelfrey and Malone?
Yeah, I'm in 100% agreement, just because I don't think that they necessarily have the upside.
Yep.
But, man, what Malone is continuing to do in AAA, it's almost like, I mean, he has a track record of having major league success before he came over to the Twins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is he, maybe pitched 10 or 15 games for the Twins overall, and he has this huge track record of saying he can be successful, he can get guys out at the major league level, he can be very valuable, and be a left-hander on the staff. But man, I just, if you could leave out Malone and Pelfrey, if you had to, those are definitely the two guys. One of those guys can go to the bullpen and fill a spot. But the bullpen has been so good. There's not necessarily just a spot for a loser out there. I mean,
yep.
You're going to need a long man, but you got that role filled. So
it'll be interesting to see if there's any kind of trade market for Malone. You know, you would think if he continues to pitch this well that he's probably going to voice some concern to his agent saying, you know, this is pretty ridiculous that I'm down here, you know, beating up on these kids at AAA when I should be up in a rotation somewhere. So I wonder if it will come to, you know, maybe end of June, beginning of July, where it's a situation where the Twins are like, yeah, we aren't going to have a spot for you this season. So let's get, even if it's, you know, some B-level prospect that's at, you know, extended spring training right now, you know, maybe get something for him. And so that he could get in a rotation at for somebody.
Well, and they've got to do something because Jose Berrios is just plowing through the minors right now. I mean, this is a guy that is going to be with this team before too long. I mean, he's definitely going to be up in September, if not before that, especially if this team can continue to win baseball games and they're going to be in a hunt for a postseason spot. I mean, he certainly seems like a great option to come up, especially if you won't have Santana in the postseason, right? You want to have a guy that you can go to then. So yeah. You want to give him innings. And then you never know what's going to happen with Alex Meyer. So Alex Meyer has really struggled with throwing strikes down in AAA. It seemed like the consistency that the Twins were looking for last year when he was good again, bad again, good again, bad again. This year it's been mostly bad again. He just hasn't been able to throw enough strikes. He's got walking a ton of guys. And now the Twins have said, hey, Alex, you're a big gangly guy. You can't get your mechanics worked out. We're going to put you over to the bullpen and see what you can do. We know you can throw in the mid to upper 90s. Just get it worked out. Be able to throw strikes on a consistent basis. Work out of the bullpen for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, however long. We'll move you back into the rotation. But it seems like there's so much talent with this guy that he's got to be able to figure it out, especially if he can just do small doses in the bullpen.
Yeah, and his first outing was on Monday evening, and he did fairly well. Struck out a couple guys in only one inning of work. So I'm sure the routine of getting warmed up for a bullpen role was probably something new to him. The team was losing at the time, so it wasn't like much of a pressure situation or anything, but good to get out there. Good that he had some success. Because it sounded from the twin standpoint that it was just like a confidence thing with him. You know, like he almost felt relieved when he found out that he was getting moved to the bullpen because he puts a lot of pressure on himself. And I'm sure he's heard, you know, so many times over and over, you know, that he was going to be a starter and, you know, he had a shot to make this rotation in spring training and he could have been up here last year. And, you know, this has been weighing on him, and the performance, as you stated, just hadn't been there so far this year. So hopefully they continue to see some positive things, out of Meyer in the bullpen. And then we can, make some other adjustments with him, maybe move him back. The Twins have kind of been doing this with someone like Alex Wimmers too, former first round pick, has made some starts, and has done some bullpen work from here as they've been trying to find his mechanics and find his health and stuff like that. And he's done some good things as well. So maybe it's just, you know, a matter of time with Mr. Meyer.
Well, and now without, I mean, like we said, with all the pitching success that the Twins have inexplicably been having, there's all of a sudden no urgency for Alex Meyer to come up, right?
Nope.
Get him figured out. You know, maybe he stays in the bullpen because I think, you know, when we traded for Alex Meyer and when we traded for Trevor May, there was a lot of chatter from the prospect guys. You know, we had Jason Parks on. We had, you know, other guys on and talk about, you know, maybe these guys end up being back of the bullpen guys. And Trevor May seems to have been able to do enough and throw enough strikes where that is no longer maybe a long-term concern for him. But Alex Meyer, if he could figure out enough, I mean, this guy could be a late-inning reliever if he can throw enough strikes. But he's not even close to throwing enough strikes right now to succeed in the bullpen. It's got to be, what is this flaw? What is this? Is it a mental game? Is it a physical thing? Is it jumping between pitching coaches? Or what is happening that you're not able to just repeat, 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 repeat? And he has the raw stuff where he should be able to blow all these AAA guys away if he can just put things together back to back to back to back.
90% of the game's half mental, right?
That's right.
Speaking of bullpen guys, we've seen a lot of good things out of the bullpen so far this year. Glenn Perkins continues to just be dominant at the back end. He's 18 for 18 in save opportunities. He's only given up three runs, something like that, for the whole season. We saw Michael Tonkin this week get some setup duty as the Twins gave Blaine Boyer a day of rest. Casey Fien's going to be coming back, and he might have to work his way back into that setup role. So we got a lot of good things happening out there with the bullpen. Again, it's good that the Twins have, you know, it's not necessarily a problem if you have a lot of good arms out there. They have guys. Michael Tonkin's been able to step in and fill in a role. Casey Fien, even though he's out, he's going to have to come back and earn that spot. I think that from a team perspective, you have these guys, they're going to be competing for those high leverage innings. And that, I think that's a good thing. I think we're going to be able to see some positive things, especially after how disastrous that bullpen looked for that first week of the season. To have them bounce back and be as good as they have been over these this recent winning streak is pretty cool.
Well, and Paul's back. He's home from the grocery store. He's now on the call. But Paul, you guys talked about, you know, Blaine Boyer getting some more high lever starts last week. You talked about what Tonkin is doing out there. I mean, it seems just natural that Casey Fien should have to come back and re-earn that spot. I mean, it's not like he's the closer where you have that one defined role. The rest of the bullpen wasn't ever really set in a seventh, eighth roles. I mean, they kind of were a little bit amorphous, and Molitor had shown the tendency to just continue to go with the hot hand. And Casey Fien will have to prove that he can be the hot hand and get back into those positions before he's just handed those eighth inning roles.
Yeah, and we heard, I think Molitor came out and said that he's not giving Fien that eighth inning back. So I like that idea. And with the way that Blaine Boyer's been pitching and, you know, Molitor's willingness to go for that platoon advantage, or even, you know, bringing Glenn Perkins, as we saw this last week, for that four out save, you know, have him stretch out over an inning or inning plus. There's no way to complain about what's been going on with the bullpen. Everyone, it seems like when they pitch to the score a little bit, they give up some runs here or there, but so far not really in a situation that it's going to cost them. I think Glenn Perkins only, maybe his only poor outing was the one time, the first time he got brought into the eighth inning and gave up one of the inherited runners there to take the loss. But otherwise, he's been lights out.
Yeah, and I mean, Perkins just continues to do it. I think last week you guys pretty much just talked about how big his cock is and how much you want to suck it.
Jeez.
I don't think that was not discussed.
But I mean,
not on air anyway.
I mean, he's done everything that's been asked of him. He's continuing to do that. And I mean, I know you talked about it last week, but after the season that he had a year ago and the injuries that he had down the stretch, it's just amazing that he could come back and do this. Some of his velocity is back closer to where it was 2 years ago. You know, he's not just getting lefties out, but he's getting righties out as well. And so, you know, that's the Glenn Perkins that we want to have. It sounds like he's on his way to being a three-time All-Star this year. And as Jay mentioned last week, he could get those 40 saves that Jay threw out there. And I probably have to owe Jay some more damn helmet nachos. The Twins probably are going to win 82 games now. Owe him helmet nachos for that. Perkins is going to get 40 saves. Owe him helmet nachos for that. The only good news is that Kenny Vargas is down in AAA and he's not going to hit 30 home runs.
He could you come know. Back and do it.
Yeah, well, if he came back and did it, look out. So, yeah, so Vargas is down, and Danny Santana, maybe he needs to go down. I mean, there's not a surplus shortstop on a team. I mean, Eduardo Escobar can do it. But after that, there's no one else that could be a regular there. And so Danny Santana certainly has a role on this team, but... man, is he really struggling in this sophomore season.
Yeah, I think one thing to look at is just we've seen Vargas go down and be pretty successful at AAA, you know, after, you know, not finding that much success at the beginning of the season. So it seems like it would be maybe in the Twins' interest to send Santana down just so he could get maybe some of that offensive confidence back, because he's not taking any walks, and he's not hitting for a very good average. I think we've seen some of his flaws on the defensive side, but we knew going in that he wasn't going to be a complete polished product on the defensive side of the ball. So I think... maybe it's something where, you know, they send him down for a handful of weeks, you know, just to get everything clicking again and maybe make some just minor adjustments. Because, you know, I feel like the Twins, as the season progresses and if they keep winning, that it's going to be a situation where they might have to sit him out more than play him, because he might be more of a hindrance than helping the offense or defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess I feel like if you send him down, then you still need that backup shortstop on the roll, and I just don't know that Eduardo Nunez, is he enough defensively to be that backup shortstop? Because, I mean, just like a backup catcher, you got to have a guy who can play shortstop on short notice if you need him, and I just don't know if I trust Eduardo Nunez to fill in as that backup shortstop.
But it's that would be like only if Escobar got injured, you know, like they could get Santana up here in a day if they
needed
to.
I guess you can always recall Doug Bernier if you've got to.
Well, so
we've seen that happen already. So
Nunez, even as bad as he was last year for the Twins, and he played what, almost half a season for the Twins last year, he hit 250, 270, 380. That's, you know, a magnitude better than what Santana is doing this year. And so if he becomes your backup and you got to roll with, you know, Escobar as your everyday guy, that's still a big improvement in terms of your everyday roster spots and what you're getting out of shortstop. And I don't think you're losing anything to go from Santana to Eduardo Escobar as your everyday shortstop defensively. And so
no, and you get Escobar's bat in the lineup then, and maybe you don't have to stick him at DH. Could give those maybe some more DH reps to Torrey Hunter with Eddie Rosario out there in right or left field. And then your defense is better. I like the lineup construction better. So I definitely, while I don't know about Eduardo Nunez as that backup shortstop, I could probably get on board with it just because what it would mean for the rest of the roster. I think there'd be a lot of advantages if Santana does get sent down.
But yeah, Santana, I mean, he needs something. What he has been doing this season is just awful. I mean, there's no other way to say that. I mean, what is he hitting even worse right now in May than he had been? This is the team that's been red hot in May, and he's hitting, I think, 218 in the month of May. So, I mean, he did better to start the year than that. He was closer to 250, 260, which could have been bearable. He's just an absolutely terrible in May while the rest of the team has taken off. So I don't know, maybe try and get him into platoon situations. You find other places where you can get him in, but something has to change. We saw him get back-to-back games off, so you don't know if maybe they're thinking about a roster change, thinking about doing something, but they can't continue to run him out there all the time. Especially now if they're hoping to be competitive as we get closer to this All-Star break and continue this hot run that they're on.
And does that hinder his development?
Well, I don't know.
He needs to play somewhere.
Yeah, he needs to play. But, I mean, we saw last year a lot of his skill, a lot of his numbers were very BABIP related. So I wonder if maybe they're talking to him behind closed doors. Hey, we'd like to see you put down a couple more bunts here or there. Maybe get a little more slappy with the ball. I don't know. I mean, at this point, he just needs to find a way to get on base so he can take advantage of a little bit of that speed that he's got. That when you're not even getting on base, you know, he's never shown a propensity to draw a walk. So he's got to swing the bat. He's got to find
even
some
way. And Paul, that BABIP, that explains a lot of the difference that he's had this year, because, I mean, he's lost almost 80 points of BABIP from where he was last year. And he's still, you know, at 327 this year. So he was really off the charts last year at 405. But if you all of a sudden take 80 points off his batting average last year from 319, all of a sudden now he's 237. So that's pretty much everywhere. But he also doesn't have the triples, and he's not getting any of those walks, because all of a sudden that power, that extra base, that gap power that he was occasionally showing last year, all of a sudden that's gone, and he's not getting on base, so he's not stealing bases, you know, and he's not at the top of the lineup, so he doesn't have a chance to score runs. He's not getting RBIs because he's now hitting at the bottom of the lineup, and he has,
you know. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but does anyone know what is he struggling against, especially against righties or lefties? You know, the switch hitter, is one side of the plate hurting him more than the other, or is he just failing from both sides? He's just kind of going out there and flailing no matter which arm the guy's throwing the ball with. Because as a switch hitter, you'd like to think, you know, you mentioned maybe trying to platoon him a little bit, but as a switch hitter, if he's not showing a real propensity from either side of the plate, then even trying to put him in advantageous situations, that becomes even more difficult.
Well, I mean, he's doing decent, and I think you could accept it if he just hit against lefties. You're just not going to see lefties every day. I mean, he's hitting almost 270 against lefties as a right-handed batter, but just 220 from the right side. So, or as a left-handed
batter. He needs to play every day, so if he's going on the thin side of the platoon there and you're only sticking him out there against lefties, he's just going to not get enough reps, enough playing time to really fight through this slump, if it is a slump and not a regression towards his true talent.
Well, and the regression towards his true talent is the major concern, right? Because that was the thing about last year that was so shocking, that he had never shown what he did last year in the minor leagues at any level, right? He had never really hit for a high average. He had never had a high on base percentage. You know, he had some speed related power numbers where he maybe got an extra base here or there, and he was able to steal some bases, but he was never a guy that you said, oh yeah, he's going to come up and he's going to be a first division regular as a major league player. He was a guy that always had a lot of question marks, a lot of holes in his offensive game. And, you know, and again, these questions that maybe he's stretched a little bit defensively, and he has shown the ability to make the flashy play at shortstop, but he's also shown that he's going to miss some of those routine plays. So I don't know. If you're not playing him every day in the major league level, get him down in Rochester, find a way to get him every day at bats and work on things. Maybe take something away from him. Maybe, you know, have him just bat from the left side for 2 weeks just to get comfortable there, then switch him over to the right side. I don't know what these coaches do. They got skills, they got things to do, they got ways to work on this kind of thing. Work on it where it doesn't matter. When you've got a team that's 10 games over 500, you got to take advantage of that. You got to run with that, and you got to make things happen.
The other thing you can look at there, though, is that this team is doing so well. I mean, everyone's clicking. They're hitting well with runners in scoring position, which seems to be the only thing that can maybe explain how they continue to win games and just be this far, what I think is kind of over their talent level. I mean, if you're playing this well, you have room to stick a guy who's struggling the way Santana is down at the bottom of your lineup, because this team is hitting so well, you know, hitting the ball so well, you know, 1-6, 1-7 in the order, that you can afford to have a guy like Danny Santana hitting the way he is this year. You can hide one guy like that, because you're not trying to hide three or four guys like that we've seen the Twins do the last couple of years. So there's room for Danny Santana on the lineup. I don't think you have to send him down, especially when the team is playing this well. I think there'd be more of an argument for sending him down if the team wasn't playing well.
All right. Well, I think we've belabored Danny Santana enough. The poor guy just... I mean, he's out there, he's doing his best, and we're just ripping him to shreds. But, you know, he's got a hit because he's not He's not Ozzie Smith with the glove where we can just continue to carry him and not do that. But let's talk about some good things. Let's go to the pitcher and hitter of the week. Let's talk about the great things that are happening. Because let's not forget, this is a team that's winning a shitload of baseball games. And good things are happening. We got good pitching performances. We got good hitting performances. It's a team that's clicking on all cylinders. So let's celebrate the good instead of dwelling on the Danny Santana.
Alrighty. So diving in then, looking at, let's start with the pitching side of things, because I think we got, this might be a little bit tougher than hitter is going to be. So we talked about a lot of these guys, but Kyle Gibson had one start in the last week, pitched those eight strong innings, only gave up one earned run, and we saw no walks, which was a good positive for Mr. Gibson, and he struck out eight, which is a pretty good jump after some of the numbers we've seen from him this season where he wasn't really able to strike out hardly anyone. As far as other starters, though, go, Trevor May pitched seven innings. So did Mike Pelfrey. May only gave up three earned runs and struck out nine without walking any. Pelfrey gave up one earned run, struck out four, and walked one. Nolasco almost pitched eight innings, had to get pulled there a little early. Gave up two earned runs, struck out five, no walks. And then we talked about Perkins' little run that he's been on. He's had three saves this week, only gave up a couple hits, struck out two, and did have that one, like Paul said, that one four-out save that he was asked to get. So plenty of good choices, guys, on the docket for this week.
And I think the thing I love in, when you're reading off those numbers is you're talking about starters. We're all going seven or more innings. I think you're looking at Trevor May. When he's able to pitch into the seventh inning and got through the entire seventh, that's amazing. But I think you have to give it to Kyle Gibson there, who went out. I think he entered the game with more walks than strikeouts, one of the worst strikeout rates in the league. Went out, no walks, eight strikeouts, gets his K per nine up on the season, I think, to right around six. So he's that's the kind of start that you've been waiting all season to see from Kyle Gibson. So for me, easy money there in all of those great performances. Kyle Gibson, I think you put the little feather in his hat. Give him pitcher of the week.
Well, and I mean, eight innings pitched, right? How often has that happened in the last 4 years for the Twins? You know, eight innings, eight strikeouts, just a one earned run, no walks. I mean, that's fantastic no matter who you are. Jay mentioned last week that he felt like this was going to be the time for Glenn Perkins to collect a bunch of the prestigious Pitcher of the Week awards from Talk to Contact in a row. And, you know, three saves and just two hits and two strikeouts. I mean, that's a pretty good week of work for any reliever, you know, any closer in the league. So that's I think he gets overshadowed because Gibson, Nolasco, and Pelfrey as starters all had pretty good work weeks. But you know, he did his job as well, pretty much as he could have done this week. So I think
he could have struck out more.
Right. That's what I was going to say. The one thing that Perkins could have done is had more strikeouts because he's out there just in a one inning roles. And so he could have had a couple more strikeouts. I think if he had five strikeouts instead of two strikeouts, I'd throw my weight behind him. But he's certainly going to get an ice cream cone from us for his performance this last week. But I got to jump on board my twin brother, Kyle Gibson.
Yeah, we're not overlooking Glenn Perkins. We did give him the award last week. Last week he had four saves in the week, so we're not. I don't think we're overlooking him by any means.
Are you guys enjoying this car alarm sound coming from my end?
Yes.
Oh, it's lovely.
It's very nice.
You know, this is an urban environment.
Yeah, it's what we're all about here on Talk to Contact. So I mean, those guys I talked about, there were some impressive starts. I like the 9 Ks from Trevor May. Just the starters in general that we mentioned, I think they're out of all the guys, there was one walk between Gibson, May, Nolasco, and Pelfrey. We got them all pitching over seven innings and one walk between all of them.
Throw Phil Hughes in there as well. He had no walks in his one start. He pitched six and two-thirds, so
So in a, our starters had one walk for this whole week. That's crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna be able to add anything more than what you guys already said. So I'll jump on the Gibson bandwagon, and we can give him the award for the week.
Whoa, hold on.
Oh, look out, folks. J-Cord in the house.
There's a vote yet to be cast.
Oh, boy. Are you going off the books? Are you saying Blaine Boyer, Jay?
I was thinking about Boyer while I was listening to you guys talk.
You're probably just thinking about Boyer all the time, all week long.
You guys see that beard? I mean, that is some serious beard.
Jay's aroused.
I like that beard. No, I'm gonna go with Glenn. I and here's why. I know we got it last week, and I think it was Maurer that I said would get a string of Talk to Contact awards, but Perkins, it might as well be Perkins. Not only is he pitching back-to-back days, now he's pitching four out saves. Lefties are actually hitting better off him than righties are. I know the strikeouts aren't there, but the reason the strikeouts aren't there is because he's throwing strikes and people are hitting it. So Perkins is confident. He's dominant. He's leading the league in saves. I don't even think it's close. I think he's got like a 2 or 3 save cushion now. So, just the way he's carrying himself out there is fun to watch. Has he walked anyone? Has Glenn Perkins walked anybody all season?
All season, he certainly has.
I don't know about that. You might want to double check your baseball reference or something like that, because I don't remember a single walk.
I just closed the damn window.
And maybe there's one. You know, maybe there's two. I don't know. But it's point being, it certainly hasn't been many. He's inherited runners.
There's two. Yep.
Two walks all season. And how many innings? 20?
22 and 2/3.
I mean, that's fantastic.
He does have a 350 ERA plus, which is just an absurd number. Well,
I mean, you give up one run. I mean, you can't – I never look at ERAs when you're talking about relievers, you know, because, I mean, until the end of the season. Because you give up one run and it just inflates it. It's not accurate. But anyway, long point short, Perkins has my vote this week, and I think deservedly so.
All right. Well, that's what we call in the legal profession the dissenting opinion.
That's right.
Kyle Gibson, 3-1 victor here, pitcher of the week. Good on you, Kyle. So, Cody, on the hitting side of things, it could be just as contentious. I mean, we've got like we said, the Twins are hitting the ball well. They're pitching well. I mean, this is going to be a tough discussion over here. So, who do we got? Who's the best hitters of the last week?
Yeah, so Trevor Plouffe led the team with 7 hits this week, 7 for 23. Had a couple doubles, a home run, drove in 6.
Is that a Brian slam?
Yep. So Dozier then has only 5 hits this week, but all of them have been for extra bases. He's 5 for 25, but he had 3 doubles and 2 home runs. He's also struck out 11 times,
yeah,
though.
Ugly.
So,
ugly.
So he doesn't really have the batting average. And
this
he's
is a guy swinging
a
from his heels.
Yeah. He's going for the fences every time. We can appreciate that.
Hold on a second. That might be true, but he's also taking a lot of pitches. I mean, he is seeing a lot of pitches.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I mean, his on-base percentage is still decent, yes, for the season. So then Eddie Rosario has fewer at-bats than the guys we've mentioned so far, but he's 6 for 16, hit that home run in that series finale versus Boston, and Rosario also drove in 4 runs this week. And then the veteran, Mr. Torii Hunter, he has 6 hits, but he's also got walked 4 times, so he's getting on base a ton, having some good at-bats. He has just the 1 extra base hit this week, a home run, and he drove in 5 runs this week. So it's quite the guys on the docket this week. Who wants to select first?
Let me just say this. I'm reluctant to give Jay Korn props at any moment and of any time, but when he says that Brian Dozier is taking pitches and seeing a lot of pitches, that's a very astute observation. Brian Dozier is 12th in the major leagues in pitches per plate appearance. at 4.11 pitches per plate appearance. And so the guys in front of him, the guy directly in front of him is the guy you might have heard of. His name is Michael Trout. David Ortiz, Jose Bautista, Mike Napoli. I mean, the names that are in front of him on this list, and slightly behind him, Miguel Cabrera, George Springer, Nelson Cruz. I mean, so...
And one other thing, we neglected to mention the fact that Brian Dozier is again, leading the league in runs scored.
Yeah, so, I mean, he is doing good things. Jay is not totally crazy and throwing weight behind him. But I think those 11 strikeouts are just... They're too much for me to vote for Brian Dozier. I'm not voting for Torii Hunter on principle, despite his dance party antics. I'm not voting for Eddie Rosario. And I tell you what, I just listened to last week's Talk to Contact episode this morning as I was out for a run. And you guys convinced me to fall back in love with Trevor Plouffe. You guys threw a lot of love his way, and I like what he did this past week. So Trevor Plouffe has my vote. Talk to Contact Aiden.
Now, wait, hold on a second. Does that take into account defensive awareness?
I was about to go right there. I would like to talk about...
Oh, this is Paul's wheelhouse.
I would like to talk about, and I'd like to call your attention back to that four-out save that Glenn Perkins has. Came in the eighth inning, two men on, gives up a scorcher up the middle, and Brian Dozier somehow is able to get to the ball, keep it in the infield, keep that run from scoring, and preserve that victory. In addition to that two home run game he had, providing all the offense he needed for the victory there, I mean, that's right there. That's two wins that Brian Dozier secures for you.
That's
so
right.
you need to weigh that heavily. So you could strike out as many times as you want. You hit two long balls in one game, and you stop. You save that go ahead winning run from tying run from getting up to the home plate. You got to go Brian Dozier here, right? You got to, except that Trevor Plouffe's just been a man, just an animal lately, and you got to stay with Trevor Plouffe.
Well, it's pleasing to me to see Plouffe turn into a cleanup hitter. I mean, Trevor Plouffe is a power corner, third baseman, cleanup hitter, and I hope that I don't know what his contract status is, but he, you know, I know a lot of teams would love to have Trevor Plouffe on their squad right now. That all said, I am going to go with Dozier because he did secure two wins. He is leading the league in runs scored. He is playing every day. He isn't making very many. I think he had an error this week, but I think it's like his second all season. The guy gets to balls that he wasn't getting to 2 years ago or 3 years ago. He's at the top of the lineup. He's setting the table. He's seeing a lot of pitches. I think when you take everything into account, the strikeouts are concerning also to me, Eric, but my vote's for Dozier.
I give it to Plouffe. Plouffe wins.
Uh-oh. We've got a split house. We'll have to break the tie.
Didn't Paul say Plouffe gets it, though? He talked up Dozier and then said...
Plouffe. I did. I talked up Dozier, but you can't...
I tuned him out after he got talking about the fielding. Once you talk about fielding, I'm out of this. Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad at least I'm listening.
So once again, Jay has a dissenting opinion, and Trevor Plouffe is this week's Talk to Contact hitter of the week.
And you guys are lucky I didn't vote for Maurer. Nobody brought up Maurer. He had his first home run. It was a game winner in Pittsburgh. He had a bases-clearing single. I know the average isn't there. I mean, what's he batting, 275 right now? That number really needs – imagine what the Twins would be doing if Maurer was hitting 320, you know?
Probably be 10 games over 500. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyways, let's go down in the pond and – and I think this is a name that we have, again, we've circled back. We've talked about this guy before, especially last year as he kind of burst onto the scene in low A. But we're going to talk this week about Chi Wee Hu. He is
who?
Who's on first? No, who is pitching? So Chi Wee Hu is a pitcher for the Fort Myers Miracle at high A. He's 21 years old. He's been absolutely he lit up low A last year in Cedar Rapids. To start the year at high A, he's continued to just dominate. He's 5-0 with a 1.03 ERA at the AA level with 36 strikeouts and 6 walks. So a 6-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio there. And then he had the honor of being called not to AA but to AAA to make a spot start. So he got jumped up 2 levels when AAA all of a sudden needed a guy. He went 6 innings in AAA, gave up just 1 run. I think he only gave up 2 hits over 6 innings. He did walk 4 guys, but he also struck out 6. So maybe a little bit of nerves keeping him from finding the strike zone as much as he would, you know, as he, if he was calmed down a little bit. But made a great start up there in AAA, got the victory. So he's now he's 6-0 across 2 levels and continues to just pitch very, very well. I pulled up the
can I add something here quick?
Yeah.
First of all, this guy needs a nickname. I'm calling him Chi, but he needs a better nickname than that.
Great first attempt.
The second thing is that this guy has really developed a following among the fans down there. You know, we've seen this in Toronto with Kawasaki and some other of these Asian players that, you know, they just tend to draw like a kind of cult following down there. And it seems that Chi is doing that too. It would be really nice to have Chi up here in Target Field and have the Asian community just rallying behind him, you know, with their faces painted and all that stuff. So he's got that going for him too. I'm a big fan of this dude. I was a big fan of when we made our preseason predictions, even though I knew nothing about him. Now I know a little more about him, and he could be up here for me a couple years. It's not out of the question.
Yeah, he's playing in his age 21 season, so I mean he's over 2 years younger than the average age of the pitchers at Fort Myers. At Rochester, he was 6 years younger than the pitchers at that level, which is pretty crazy. So. For him to be this successful and facing other players that are much older than him is pretty astounding. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's able to keep this up. It sounds like they skipped after his Rochester start and coming back to High A, they skipped his next start. But it doesn't sound like it's anything to worry about. Just more of, you know, he had a pretty stressful performance there, and they got to watch, you know, innings limits for these guys anyway. So,
boy, if they can... who was a guy that didn't pitch a lot of innings last year?
Only 55. He only pitched 55 last year, the most at 55 at Cedar Rapids, and another 16 at Elizabethton. So, he only pitched 71 innings last year. So, if they can save him a start now. That's another start further into the season, maybe when they're in playoff mode, where he can be making a start, maybe, who knows, even for Chattanooga as they push towards the playoffs later in the season.
Cody, I need to know a little bit about where this guy came from, what his contract status is, what he throws, what he likes to eat at midnight snack, those kinds of things. Give me a little bit of a scouting report on our guy Chi here.
It sounds like Jay Cord needs to pick up a copy of the Minnesota Twins Prospect Handbook.
I've read
with
it.
With a foreword by Mike Berardino, authored by Sesto's Jeremy Nygaard and our very own Cody Christie.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
I only ask for the benefit of our listeners who may not have picked up their copy.
So you're saying they should pick up a copy as well.
Right.
Well, before Cody gets into a scouting report, I know that we talk about all the time that minor league numbers don't mean that much. Pitcher wins don't mean anything. But this is a guy who joined the organization in 2013. And in his little over 2 years of work, albeit in reduced innings load, he's 15-2 and has a career ERA of 1.94. And in just almost 150 minor league innings, has only
did you say 2 runs, I believe.
So 1.94 career ERA across 3 4 levels now with that AAA start. Just, I mean, he's impressed everywhere he goes. I mean, we talk about a guy who jumped from High A up to AAA to make a spot start. And, you know, I think he had 3 innings before he got those walks in the last 2 innings, you know, his second time through the order, but I mean, just very impressive. And you started to hear a little bit of chatter last season as he kind of all these prospect guys around the league started talking, noticing what he was doing, and he's just continued it this year. And I think that for even the casual Twins fans, they're starting to know who this guy is.
Yeah,
pun intended.
He burst on the scene like a Lewis Thorpe did, except he hasn't had a Tommy John surgery to bust him back off the scene. He's continuing to back it up with results again. So Cody, give us the scouting report. Tell us a little bit more about what he throws, what's his velocity, what can we expect from him going forward?
Well, and, you know, I haven't heard a lot on the scouting reports from him this season, but Jay, you were wondering a little bit about his background. So we signed him in August of 2012. We were fighting with a few other clubs for him and outbid the Pirates, the Red Sox, and the Cubs. He is signed out of Taiwan, and he did some good things in high school, is obviously why the Twins were on him or tracking him. And he's even had some experience pitching on the national level for their national team. So, I mean, he does have some experience, even though he is a little bit younger.
Whoa, hold on a second. China does not recognize Taiwan as an independent country. So I don't know what's going on with this international competition stuff, but that is not sanctioned by the Chinese government.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you to our international correspondent.
Yep. So he's a little over 6 feet tall, weighs about 210. His fastball can get up to 97, but that's when he really wants to hawk it up there. So he's usually sitting in the low 90s with that fastball. Got a decent curveball that has some bite to it. Good control and command. Continues to develop his changeup. Has a palm ball, but doesn't use it very much.
Why do all of these Far East players, Darvish and Tanaka and Chi, why do they have 11 pitches? All of them.
That was only four, Jay, and I said he didn't. You know, he did, one of them. He doesn't throw that much.
Yeah.
So
he had a couple more in his back pocket somewhere.
So he's got, I mean, out of the pitches I mentioned, I mean, he throws the fastball, the changeup, and the curveball the most regularly. And, you know, just uses that nice little three-pitch mix. I mean, has shown to be pretty successful, even against, like we said, against hitters that are older than him in leagues where he's younger than the competition. So he's obviously has been overshooting some of the reports and expectations of him so far. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, like I said, he could be in some playoff races here as Fort Myers has struggled a little to start the season. So if someone like Chattanooga or even Rochester needed some help for a playoff run, Hugh could be just what the doctor ordered.
Okay, we're calling him Chi. And is Chi the number one international pitching prospect in the organization?
I would say so, yeah.
Probably depends on your definition of Puerto Rico.
Well, yeah.
Puerto Rico doesn't count.
Well, then yes.
International signee, not someone that was from a draft.
Yeah, right? Okay. Good job.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a guy that can throw consistently into the low 90s in a late start and, you know, dial it up there when he needs to. So this is definitely a guy to watch. And if the Twins are bumping him up two levels for a spot start, and that's when you have a pretty dang decent rotation at AA.
Yep.
You know, so he's jumping over a lot of guys. And some of that is just what the rotation looks like, who's the next guy up. But some of it is also, who are the talent evaluators that are in Rochester watching that game, and who do they want to maybe see without making a trip, you know, down to Fort Myers if they can avoid it?
Who?
Yeah, he let the dogs out, I think.
that's what I was going for.
It can't be that long before who's up with Double A
I mean, Double-A's got a couple of guys that are struggling right now. I think Duffy and Wimmers both struggling in the Chattanooga rotation right now. So I understand. I think Terry Ryan made some comments to who probably sticking around in Fort Myers longer than fans want, but I don't know how much longer they can continue to have him pitch down there at high A. He needs I mean, we saw him pitch at Triple-A. We know he's got the stuff to do it. He probably can't be too long for that rotation. He's going to be up with the lookouts before long.
You called him who twice. I'm very disappointed that Chi is not sticking here.
Chewy. I don't know who Chi is.
Chi. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. It's like
Who?
If Ron Gardenhire was on this podcast, he'd definitely call him Chewy. Yeah. Anyways, that's enough about who or Chi or Chewy who, whoever this guy is. So let's talk about beer because I've had a couple, and I've actually had a couple of different beers. So, Paul, why don't you give us a sound effect?
Ribbit.
Beers from around the world.
All right, Jay, thank you for stepping in there and pinch hitting for the Baseball Pirate. So I have, I think the last time I was on the podcast 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, I was drinking some kind of beer that was related to curling. Cody, you were familiar with this. It was from the Squatters Brewing.
Mm-hmm.
I had another beer this week from Squatters. It's the Bumper Crop Honey Ale. I had one of these. I bought a six-pack. And holy buckets, this is like honey and lavender in your face.
Sounds like a delicious ice cream, but I'm not sure I'd want to drink that.
It almost tasted like a shandy, except it actually tasted like a beer.
Okay.
So it was like a shandy with no lemonade, but still tasting like a shandy. So Laura has five of these to drink now. And then I also bought a sixer from the local Bauhaus Brew Labs here in Minneapolis. And I'm drinking the Wonder Stuff. And this is a really good beer. It's categorized as a neo-bohemian pilsner.
I'm a little offended that you went to Bauhaus and did not invite me to go with you.
I just went to the liquor store and got it in cans. You can get Bauhaus.
Retail now, huh?
Oh, yeah. You can get it retail in cans at all your fine liquor stores here, at least in the metro area. So drinking this Bauhaus, it's really good. It's a great pilsner. It's very hot so in Minneapolis, as far as Minnesota goes. So even this honey ale that I had, this Bauhaus, this ale, this pilsner that I'm having, both great warm weather beers, so I'm very pleased with myself. Plus, I've had three beers, so I'm obviously pleased with myself already.
Paul, Cody, the next time you guys are in town, we're going to Bauhaus.
Okay, well, I as you know, I was in town.
What the shit, Jay? Wedding. I'm in town all the time.
No, but
when
I don't
want to Bauhaus.
I know, but I don't want to hang out with you. That's the only thing.
Oh, all right, fair enough.
Anyway, so when I was fortunate enough to attend Eric's wedding, he gave me a very nice groomsman gift of a wooden six-pack of a beer holder, like a beer toolbox, I guess, maybe you'd call it. It's got an opener on the side, and it was filled with New Glarus offerings. So this afternoon, in addition to having two women, I also had a totally naked, so you could probably say I had two women totally naked, which is more than any man could ever ask for.
That's right.
Both of these beers taste fantastic when you're sitting on the porch in the afternoon sun out in Seattle. But I especially enjoyed the totally naked, the nice barley flavors you get there. It's very, very crisp, very clean beer. And so for those of you living near the Wisconsin border, I encourage you to drive into that waste of a state that's only good for beer, sausage, and cheese.
Wait. There's a fourth thing in Wisconsin.
What is that?
It's Jeremy Nygaard, who just had a birthday this week. So Jeremy, I think, is 800 years old. Happy birthday, Jeremy Nygaard. But the fourth good thing from Wisconsin.
So go over there, get some New Glarus, and smuggle them back across state lines.
All right, G, Jason, tell me you're having a Svedkadu.
Nope, not having a Svedkadu. And if you had your Skype video on, you'd see that I'm not drinking a Svedkadu. I have a confession to make, boys. I stole these from the Red Currant fridge this afternoon.
Again? 2 weeks in a row?
I know, it's 2 weeks in a row. It's becoming a problem. But this week I've got Fulton.
You're lucky none of them listen to the podcast.
Even if they did, I don't think they'd care. This is Fulton The Ringer. This is
oh,
The Ringer.
That's a good one.
Yeah, The Ringer from Fulton. I'm on my third. And this is, you know, you guys know I don't like the pale ales. I'm a little like, you know, I like them tall and blonde. But this Ringer is good. It really is. It's good. You know, I'm a big supporter of Fulton. We were talking today about the lack of tailgating at Target Field at work. And I said, there isn't a lack of tailgating. There's Fulton. And that's kind of true. I mean, Fulton's right across the street there. A lot of people go there before the game. So while popular, trendy, and all that, I'm a fan of Fulton, and I'm definitely a fan of The Ringer.
And well, if you haven't been to Fulton yet, Fulton, when they first started over there up in that kind of that warehouse district over by Target Field, they were like in the middle of nowhere. And now if you go to Fulton, there's like three apartment complexes surrounding where they're building it at. So Fulton, if you haven't discovered it yet, is going to be taken over by hipsters. So get over there while you can.
It was taken over by hipsters last month. I'm sorry to report.
Oh, geez. So yeah, get over there while you can still stomach it and get some of their beer. Otherwise, just get it at the liquor store and tell your friends you went over there and hang out with the cool kids.
Very nice. I'm having a... from the Breckenridge Brewery, it's called their Avalanche Amber Style Ale. This is not Breckenridge, Minnesota, if you guys know where that is, over here on the North Dakota, Minnesota border here. But this is based out of Denver, Colorado. As far as ales go, it's pretty good. I like compared to the flavor of it is, I'm trying to think of something that it would be similar to, but I usually ales I'll drink, but don't usually shy towards them. Like this is probably out of this six pack, it's probably about the fourth one I've had, and it's probably one of my new favorites in the ale department. So that's from the Breckenridge Brewing Company. It's the Avalanche Amber Style Ale. So look for it at a liquor dealer near you.
How can you not love Cody Christie? I mean, seriously, that is genius.
He's an impressive human being, despite his geographical location in North Dakota.
Right.
So, gentlemen, we are running a little bit long in the tooth right now. People are probably tired of listening to us. So one topic from each of you for around the league. I'll let you each get at it.
Paul?
Well, I would just like to thank the guys over from Baseball PhD, a fellow baseball podcast over at baseballpodcast.net. Okay. They were kind enough to have me on their show this past week to talk about the surging Minnesota Twins. I tried to identify what exactly it was that was fueling this run that they've been on without coming up with a good answer. But they had me on the show. I had a lot of fun. And if you like hearing about – one of the things the Baseball PhD guys do is they talk about a little bit in depth about all the different stadiums around the league. It's a fun show. Ed puts on a great show there. So if you need a little more baseball in your ears, then I encourage you to go check out Baseball PhD.
Yeah, and baseballphd.net, you can get to it. There's a picture of Paul, gravestones, and an old car on top of their website right now.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, buddy, but they only wanted you for your body.
I'm happy to supply it.
Very nice. I think I'm going to go with the Indians kind of did something cool this week. Mike Avila's daughter was diagnosed with leukemia. So all the players on the roster shaved their head to show
show support for Aviles and his family. So hats off to the Indians for that show of support. And good thoughts and good vibes and prayers to Aviles and his daughters that she can make a good recovery, because, I mean, cancer sucks, and especially when it goes after youngins. So thoughts and prayers their way.
Yeah, we wish all good things for the Indians except for W's.
Except for W's.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with, and you know, I struggled with this because you guys know how much I love Around the League, but I just kept coming back to Bryce Harper. I think what we're seeing right now is once in a lifetime. I don't think that you're going to see a guy mash like this, be this locked in, be able to hit every single kind of pitch off any kind of left or right. And the home runs that he's not hitting are going for doubles. I mean, I don't know what his average is at right now. He might be striking out a little bit more than, but what Bryce Harper is doing right now in just the last month has lifted an entire ball club. We all expected big things out of the Nationals at the beginning of the season. We all expected big things out of Bryce Harper at the beginning of the season. But to see the run, the tear that he's on now, and to see it live. I mean, I have an opportunity to see a lot of the Nationals games either on replay or live, depending on the day and the time and all that. The Nationals are a team I'm watching. Scherzer is locked in, and Harper is just – I mean, he's just a monster. He's just a monster.
And the thing I love seeing from Bryce Harper this season is just how selective he's being with the pitches. He's taking a lot more pitches than we've ever seen from him before, even taking some strikes. And it feels like he's waiting on his pitch. And, I mean, he's getting balls that are on the outer half of the plate, and somehow he's finding a way to even pull those balls. You know, he's not just taking them the other way for a bloop single. He's finding, like, balls that are, like, almost in the other batter's box. He somehow is finding a way to pull that ball into a second deck home run. It's unfathomable what he's been doing.
It's like they called him up when he was a teenager, like he didn't have that much experience or something.
Well, I mean, and that's such a good point, Cody, because if you look at his age, I mean, people think, what do you think, Bryce Harper's 25, 26? I think he's like 23, 22. He's a baby.
I believe.
He's 22. He's 22. Bryce Harper has like 15 years of solid Major League Baseball ahead of him. We could be looking at, I think we're looking at a Hall of Famer, but we could be looking at an all-time great.
Yeah, he's been very impressive. And where I want to go on the way out here is to Justin Verlander. So Justin Verlander, I think 6 weeks ago we talked about how he was like tweeting or Instagramming something to the effect of fuck the haters. He's going to get out there and work hard. He still hasn't even thrown a rehab start yet. But this coming Sunday, he is set to make his first rehab start of the year at AAA. Going to throw 80 or 85 pitches or so, and it shouldn't be too long before he's back in a major league rotation. But for a Detroit team that's kind of struggled since their hot start, if Verlander can come back and just be a stabilizing force in the rotation, he doesn't have to come back and be the ace Justin Verlander. If he can come back and be the third best pitcher in that rotation, he's going to give him a few more wins, and it's going to make the AL Central a lot more exciting as we get closer to the All-Star break. So,
good point, Eric.
Watch for him coming back. But I was just, how is he not back already? This is a guy that, you know, when he went out, it was like, oh, he's just going to be out a couple weeks. This is a couple weeks. This is a couple weeks. This is a couple weeks. It seems like it has turned into the Joe Mauer bilateral leg weakness, and he just continues to be out longer and longer than expected.
Eric, it's just going to be another couple weeks.
Probably just another couple of weeks. Another simulated game here, simulated game there. Maybe just a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks.
You know, one last note, anybody who's looking to get out, if you're listening to this before like Sunday, this was going to be a great weekend. The Blue Jays are in town. The Blue Jays are a little unusual. They only come in once a year. I'm going to the game on Sunday with my daughter, maybe my wife. It's Brian Dozier bat day. And you know what?
Are you sitting out in the outfield?
I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to say, but
if you sit on the outfield, make sure to bring a glove, because there's a guy, you might have heard of him. Name is Bautista, and he owns Target Field. So if you're sitting out, it doesn't matter if you're in the upper decks, way out furthest seat, worst seat in the house, you need to bring a glove, because Jose Bautista is going to hit some, and they're going to go a long way.
And if you're an MLB TV subscriber, tune into that Blue Jays broadcast. Because the way that they say Jose Bautista will just bring a smile to your face every time he comes up to bat.
Also, point of note, you know, we don't get to see the Twins take batting practice, but we do get to see the visiting team take batting practice. And between Encarnacion and Bautista...
And Chris Colabello!
And Chris Colabello!
Oh, let's not forget Danny Santana, or excuse me, Danny Valencia, who's raking against left-handers.
But if you get out there early enough for batting practice for the visiting team, you get out in those left field bleachers, you got yourself a good chance of getting a ball.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us on this week's edition of Talk to Contact podcast. Remember, rate and review us on iTunes, even if you think you're terrible. We're terrible. You're terrible, obviously, if you're listening this long. We will talk to you next week. Go Hoyas.